Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. You know, here at WILL, we get many, many questions from listeners. People have questions about programs and what we run and why we do. And, of course, those questions go to our programming people, guys like Jay Pierce and Dan Simeone. Also, though, we have many questions that are technical in nature. People are curious about how it is that the signal gets from here to where you are. Sometimes people say, I'd really like to listen to your station, but I'm having some problems. Can you give me some advice? Those sorts of questions go to the guy who's here with us this morning, our chief engineer, Ed West, chief engineer for WILL. He's been good enough to come in and spend some time with us on other programs and field calls, these sorts of questions. Maybe you have questions about the technical side of the operation. He will respond to those. Maybe you have some questions about difficulties receiving the station. Maybe we can advise you there. We perhaps can talk a little bit about things that are new here at WILL and in the world of broadcasting. Any and all of those questions are great. You're welcome to call. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's for local folks. We do also have the toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number and we'll pay for the call. 800-222-9455. And any point here, if you have questions, you're welcome to call. Well, thank you very much for being with us again.
Well, glad to be here.
Maybe just for a minute, we could talk about something. We've discussed this, I'm sure, when Dan was on the program last, I think. And that's a project that we're involved in, testing a new kind of antenna, broadcast antenna. Not that there's maybe any big news on this, but just as a way of giving a progress report, where do things stand with that at the moment?
Well, as a bit of history, not too long-winded, I hope, we have always been searching for ways to be able to stay on the air longer at night and with higher power to better serve our listeners. And lately on the electronic horizon have appeared some new kinds of antennas and antenna theories that have promised to enable us to do that. Essentially, the problem is that the current antennas we use essentially throw too much power off into the vertical regions where they are refracted back down to areas far away that we don't wish to interfere with. And if we could send more of our energy horizontally along the ground where it is normally dissipated instead of up where it will appear at strange and unwanted places, we could do a much better job of doing this. Have to locate the cough button here. Anyway, we are looking at these kinds of antennas. Several have appeared. At least one of them appears to have been discredited. All of them have to be tested very rigorously in this country to be sure they pass the FCC's efficiency requirements, and that is what we are attempting to do, is to organize and conduct a test that will show us whether or not these antennas, or at least certain models of them, are efficient enough to do what needs to be done under FCC efficiency rules. So that's essentially where we stand right now. We don't have anything constructed yet. And, of course, we're going to investigate the theory very carefully to make certain it holds up and that we don't throw any good money after bad, so to speak, in the process.
So it's not something that we expect that's just going to yield results anytime, probably within maybe even the next couple of years?
Well, probably not. We have not, in fact, yet settled on a given design, and we're still in the process of negotiating with the inventors for rights to do certain things, certain tests, and to build certain models. And the of course, the FCC is an important actor in this because they have to give permission for any tests to be conducted in a real way. So that is still up in the air, although WILL is one of the two, I should say the University of Illinois is one of the two organizations with an application before the commission. Ours has been before the commission for quite some time, and I hope to, shall we say, outlive it.
We hope so, too. Well, we'll just keep folks posted on that as there are further developments. We have a caller to talk with, and others are welcome if you have technical sorts of questions about what we do here at WILL, or maybe more generally about broadcasting. Our guest is Ed West. He's our chief engineer. So all you need to do is call us. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The caller is in Glen Ellen. It's line number four. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
I listened to your program from Glen Ellen here inside of a concrete block building, so I kind of have to stretch my radio to pick you up. And I know about 5 o'clock I have to switch in my select antenna to peak the signal out, so your power must drop. And I just wonder precisely what in terms of wattage is a change. Is it like 5,000 to 500 watts?
In fact, it's to somewhat less.
Oh, really?
Yes. Currently, we're using several power levels. We, in fact, could go to 500 watts in the winter time. But because of various complications, we use 5,000 watts during the day, mm-hmm. 335 watts during the interim period at night and in the morning, and then for the deep nights, we go to 100 watts.
Is the switch time about 10 minutes to 5 or 4:30, somewhere like that, when my signal drops off rapidly?
In December, it's 4:30.
4:30. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's about right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the times we do the power switch. It requires no interruption with the newer transmitter we use, so that it more or less fades away.
Is that a requirement, sir, or is that just a policy, or are you sharing a signal with someone else and you have to reduce mm-hmm. power?
It is actually a requirement of the commission. Until about 20 years ago, we simply had to sign off at local sunset, which is, in our case, 4:30 in December. The daytime broadcasters were raising enough interest, shall we say, at the commission to cause them to search for a way to at least allow us to be on the air in some fashion. The first change was the pre-sunset authorizations, which allowed us to be on the air from 6 a.m. to local sunset, because prior to that time, stations in our class could operate only from local sunset to, rather from local sunrise to local sunset.
Mm-hmm.
So at first they allowed us to be on from 6 in the morning, if that occurred before local sunset, to local sunset, with a lower power, which was 335 watts. Then they came on with the evening operation, which allowed us to operate for a few hours in the evening with a lower power. And finally, they allowed us to operate with a fairly low power all night, which in our case is 100 watts.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. That answers my question. Thank you.
All right.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you. Just for the information benefit of people who are listening, Brian Wagner, who's on the board this morning, typed into my screen here on this side the times for the power step-downs. And apparently in the month of January, the first is at 4:45, and then the next one is at 5:15. Then in February, it's 5:30 and 6, and in March, 6 and 6:30. So people can see that as the days get longer, then we can stay on at the higher levels for longer, then to the point of in the summer, we're on at full power until about mm-hmm. 8 or maybe
right.
as late as
8:30, something like that. But obviously this has to do with ionospheric effects and the fact that when the sun is shining on our particular part of the atmosphere, the ionized layers are closer and closer to the Earth. And as it turns out, the reflections or refractions or bending of the waves occur closer and closer to the Earth. So during the day, the energy we radiate in the upper directions may be reflected down very close to us, well within our ground wave coverage. But at night, when the these reflections would take place hundreds and hundreds of miles above the Earth, our energy that we radiate vertically might well be reflected in areas like the East Coast, the West Coast, even Canada and Mexico, where there are treaties that discourage this kind of activity. Hmm. So our nighttime limitations, which were assigned to us back in 1937 when WILL AM went on 580 kilohertz at its present transmitter location, have become even tighter as other stations have squeezed in. So it's not only in the United States, it's Canada, Mexico, and other countries.
Yeah, and it, as the caller suggests, there are in other places, not only in this country, but in other countries, radio stations that are broadcasting on 580.
Right.
And so we are doing what we do so as not to interfere with their
correct
broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
All right. In Chicago next, line number four, right here. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yes.
Good morning.
One of the things I'd like to say is I'm glad you're doing the first hour of weekend Sunday morning with Leanne Hansen over again, because sometimes, you know, you might oversleep and miss the puzzle or whatever. So I'm glad you're doing that. One of the things I'd like to ask the engineer is I noticed on Sunday morning, at least up here in Chicago, your signal doesn't get any stronger until 8 or 8:30 or even 9 o'clock. I wonder, is there a reason for that?
Well, no, and it certainly the power increase certainly should be taking place at the usual time. I check what are called logs, which operators fill out when they make these changes, and so far the Sunday changes have been made.
Well, you know, we have a good station up here, WBEZ, but I'm lucky. We're both fortunate because we have two good NPR stations.
Uh-huh.
So I don't want to make it believe that we're not doing without or anything.
Right.
Theirs is a little different than yours, but I think you're both good stations.
Well, we certainly try to be.
Yeah, and since you went on the World Wide Web, have you been getting emails from strange places like Tokyo or Guam or any of those places?
Well, yes, on occasion.
Yeah. That must be strange, you know, to be over there and be able to hear a local commercial for a. Well, of course, on your station you can't do that, but you know what I mean. To hear a local station and then champagne or whatever.
Yes, it is a unique thrill, I think, to even for us here in this country to be able to sample our foreign friends in Japan and Australia and see what kind of job they're doing, particularly in our field
listen to it all day on the internet, you know, like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that we have talked about doing, it would be inviting people to, on a show like this, to pose a question by email. So then theoretically that would mean that if someone was listening in another country, it wouldn't cost them anything to participate in the show that way. So I think at some point we're going to have to kind of figure out how we got all of our screens and everything set up in the studio, and we're going to do that, but I'm interested in trying it, and I would like to see just how many people there would be who would. I'm not necessarily thinking we're going to get so many people from Tokyo, but, you know, people from around the Illinois or around the United States.
Well, either New York or Los Angeles or one of those places.
Yeah, it could well be. We won't know until we try, I guess.
And by the way, when are you going to have Rich Warren on? I know it's the Consumer Electronics Show just ended.
Yeah, I'm sure sometime soon. I don't know if at the moment we have him scheduled, but I think for several years now it's been our habit, at least around that time, to have him on because he does go to the show and he sees the new stuff, and then he can come back and talk about that.
I'm interested in knowing what the Xbox is and what Ultimate Television and all that other good stuff.
I would expect that probably sometime within the next 3-4 weeks, maybe we could have him on. So we'll try and give you some heads up on that.
Okay, thank you. You're doing a good job, both of you.
Thank you
very much.
Sure.
Other questions are welcome. Questions about the technical side of the operation here. Our guest is Ed West. He is the chief engineer for WILL. And if you have a question, you can call us in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. One of the things that I'm sure people are aware of, and they understand, that weather, thunderstorms at least, can interfere with AM reception. Are there other sorts of local conditions that maybe could cause problems if you are some ways away from the place that the signal is coming from?
Well, even if you're in a city, say the size of Champaign-Urbana, you can have a considerable problem, particularly where there are very large power lines and power line pole structures of a metal nature. Even here in town, when we are at full power on certain large boulevards with very large power lines on them, you can experience, as you drive along, say, in your car, a fading effect. And this is due to the fact that the power lines and their supporting structures serve as antennas and actually re-radiate the signal. And, of course, where they re-radiate the signal, where the re-radiated signal and the original signal from the transmitter are equal but opposite, you get no signal. And so your radio fades away to noise, and that can occur even as close as several miles away from the transmitter. And there's only a certain amount of control we have over the power lines and the way they're built. And we do attempt to warn the power line, the power companies, when they are going, certainly when they're going to interfere with our directional radiation pattern, which the FCC will essentially punish us for if we don't keep in good adjustment. But there's only a certain amount of control we have over that. So we try to fight the good fight, but don't always win.
Next caller is in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
What is the name of your speaker now?
He is Ed West. He's our chief engineer.
Ed West. Yeah, that's what I thought. Ed.
Yes.
Are you listening to me? My name is Nick Brisky. I'm a retired professor of art. 87 years old, been listening to WILL, I think, ever since I got here in 1948. I don't know, several years ago, I called you about recommending a radio to me because of a loss of hearing. And you did recommend the General Electric, a little rectangular job that has been excellent, except that I think I knocked it off my desk, and it isn't as good. It got a little static. Ed, have you, do you have new equipment now that you'd like to tell a guy who's used your information and WILL information, I don't know for how long in teaching and in my own life, what latest equipment you got for a harder hearing type who depends for his news on WILL, but it's, sometimes it's hard to get it?
Well, I would, if the radio...
Oh, excuse me, Ed, one more point. I have a plug-in amplifier to stick in my ear and into your radio so it doesn't bother the rest of the house. And that's it.
Well, I'm not sure that we really have anything that is going to improve much over what you already have.
Really?
Yeah, the GE Super Radio, which is probably... that's what you've got. Well, it still is one of the best AM radios out for its price. You can get better radios for several hundred more dollars, but really I think the Super Radio 3 is still the best AM radio that you can get, and it has a headphone connection.
Yes.
Which can be used by people with hearing problems. And I still think it's the best deal for AM that you can get your hands on. So I am an unabashed Well, I'm proselytizing for the radio, but they're widely available. They're relatively inexpensive. They're battery operated
and electrically operated.
Electrically operated, and they do have a decent FM section.
Yes. So you're going to make your interview right now awfully short, aren't you? I don't know what more to ask you, except you've got a television that's just as good.
Well, the television sets really are improving, and they're going to, on that subject, and the newer television sets are going to have a lot of features for hearing impaired people, for instance. Many channels, I'm particularly talking in the digital sense now, when digital television comes.
Well, that's a point. Let me write that down, Ed. Digital. Okay, got it.
All right. It isn't here yet, at least in an over-the-air sense. There are some digital channels available on direct satellite systems. And things that Rich Warren likes to talk about, but when digital television appears, they will definitely have services for the hearing impaired, and digital video description. The FCC has recently required that, starting in April of 2002, people who transmit these programs like our TV station and cable channels, when there is a visual description track that accompanies the program, it must be transmitted. Some stations and some cable operations have simply not bothered with those, but the FCC will now require them to be sent along, as well as improved captioning systems that say you can adjust where they show up on your screen so they don't cut out other messages that may be important to you.
Oh, boy. Ed, you've made my day. Uh-huh. May the bird of paradise smile on you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for the call.
We appreciate listeners like you.
Are now, when manufacturers now make television sets, are all new TVs required to be capable of showing the closed captions?
Yes, virtually every set now made, or well, hardly anything's made here in the country anymore, but anything imported is required to be show captions. And there are many other actually under the new captioning laws. Not only is a main captioning channel available, but other text information is capable of being sent, and probably won't be much implemented until we get into the digital arena. Mm-hmm. Where you may well be overloaded with enhanced television and messages that you can select, but you'll be able to select them. And in fact, as you can in most cases, you can, if you want to, you can turn them all off and just simply see the television picture.
Yeah, it seems surprising, but it's not surprising that when you think about it, that for such a long time, it seemed that people who manufactured television sets just didn't seem particularly interested in sound. I guess they were just concerned with pictures,
right.
And they would put these terrible speakers on there. And I don't know, maybe a lot of broadcasters weren't putting out a very good quality sound signal anyway, so maybe it would not have mattered. And I think only in recent years now do newer sets. Does it seem that they're actually paying attention to the sound quality that they reproduce?
Yes, particularly in the more expensive sets. I myself recently purchased a fairly expensive analog set, which has many nice features. And the sound quality on that is really has really improved tremendously. The stereo sound, when you are listening to a stereo sound channel, it has presence, it has an image, actually. But certainly when I started in the business, in fact, sound was mixed in a television setting for the typical 4-inch single loudspeaker, sometimes hidden at the back of the set among the dust and the wires. So anything you heard was generally reflected off the back wall and a lot of television sound really was sort of an orphan. It was there, and not much attention was paid to sound on the set. Soundproofing wasn't taken very seriously, and certainly those of us in broadcasting who heard the first satellite transmissions, which were full fidelity stereo, and sometimes the background sound from sets was agonizing. You could hear lamps falling over, shoes shuffling, and people just hadn't taken time to prepare these sets to meet the requirements of high fidelity listening. But having been interested in sound all my life and having originated in the radio side of broadcasting where sound is everything, I and my colleagues and predecessors here at WILL have always had a healthy respect for the audio portion of what we do. And even though our television, sister television station, hasn't gone stereo yet, for various reasons, we are prepared to give you the best kind of sound that digital or analog can provide.
We are just a little bit past the midpoint of this hour of Focus 580. Our guest is Ed West. He's the chief engineer for WILL. And occasionally is here on the program. We talk about the technical side of broadcasting. Your questions are certainly welcome. We have two people ready to go here. We'll get right to them. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and the toll-free 800-222-9455. And if you match those numbers with letter on the phone, you get WILL. And this man right here is the guy who was responsible for that. He said, "How'd you like to have your number spelled WILL?" And we said, "Sure, sounds like a good idea to us." And he said, "Okay, we'll make it so." 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. A Chicago caller here, line number 4. Hello?
Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning.
This hearing problem with television says, I've run into this about this. This is the sixth time an older person trying to watch television. Why don't they make a set where the screen and the speakers can be across the room? Or you could have the rest of the set next to your armchair with all the controls and another speaker in there. Did anybody ever make a set like that? You could run the cord or the cable under the carpet, and you could watch your set and control it from your armchair. Mm-hmm. And the speaker would also be in the box next to your armchair, or a speaker on the screen across the room.
That's a great idea, and I will bet that somebody somewhere has done that, but that because of the cost of it, it didn't have much public general interest or wasn't produced very widely.
Well, like I say, I've run into 5 or 6 people where they either turn the set up loud and annoy everybody else, or they just don't watch television because it's too much of a problem. But if they had the speaker next to the chair, then they could hear it clearly, or also have a headset that you could plug in. I just thought that it's never been tried.
Well, what I would suggest if one had enough money to do it or the budget to do it would be to get a decent television set with a good audio output, and actually connect it up to one of the infrared systems. There are some infrared headphone systems that are used that allow a person to move around at least within a room.
Without a wire.
Without a wire. Uh-huh. But they have a pair of stereo headphones, and of course, since some television materials now in stereo audio, that might be the way to do it. You'd have independent adjustment of your volume and
That would be clear.
Yes.
And as
yeah.
you move around, would it change? Would the volume change?
No.
Like FM radio?
No. Oh, well, not really, because it is an FM system. As long as you're within range of the infrared transmitter, there aren't the same problems that you have in FM when you're, say, driving through the countryside.
FM radio, if you move around sometimes, it seems to change.
Right.
Would a system like that bother your neighbor?
No.
It wouldn't interfere with his programming or anything?
No, because it would be infrared, and so it would be strictly, literally, line of sight. In other words, if you went out of the room that the transmitter was in, and the unit on top of the headset couldn't see it, the audio would simply mute to silence.
I see. Well, we're, like I say, senior citizens. I think there's a lot of senior citizens around, and I think they'd like something a little better than the sets that they have now.
Right.
I talked to Rich Warren. He says you can buy a separate speaker, which you can plug into the set and hold it in your lap or something like that.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. I'm sure that there are some television sets, although they might be high-end sets, that might have speaker terminals on the back of the set so that if you wanted to, you could take, say, a set of stereo speakers and you could plug them into the TV. But probably if you had a relatively inexpensive set, they probably wouldn't give you an option like that.
No, but even they can be usually be adapted by some electronics enthusiast who, will put a jack in the back that you can plug into if you wish. The adding that kind of trinket is not that complicated, it can be done fairly cheaply. But most of the new sets, of course, do accommodate external audio connections.
Yeah, and your suggestion about the idea of thinking about a wireless headset is probably the easiest and least expensive way to do that.
Right. The wired things always get in the way and invariably get you start to move and you forget the wire's there and you rip something loose and it has to be repaired and it's eventually I think the wireless things usually pay for themselves in terms of lack of repairs.
Okay. We have another caller here there in Eureka, line one.
Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning.
How good the memory is for your guest. On one of his previous appearances, he was talking about some little radio place. I think it's in a small community up in Wisconsin. I think they had an antenna for people in a difficult receiving area. Do you recall that place in Wisconsin?
In Wisconsin. I don't recall a place in Wisconsin. The place I usually tout is a place out in California.
Do you recall, was there a special antenna that you were recommending?
Yes, depending upon the application, I do from time to time recommend special kinds of antennas.
Yeah, well, I'm in the fringe area, and
Now, is this for AM or FM?
Actually, it's in FM.
Oh, it's an FM situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, see, yeah, and also, some days the FM signal, see, I'm about 100 miles from your location.
Right.
And some days you come in like a local station.
Right.
And other days the background static almost overwhelms the signal.
Right. At 100 miles, I would think that would, even with a very good antenna and radio, that would probably be about right.
Okay. Well,
That would be conditions I would expect.
Yes.
Some bad days.
Yes. Now, is there a particular time when I can expect good reception? I mean, like clear days or cloudy days or something like that?
Well, it really that really is a very variable thing. Probably if you are lucky enough to have the a front that a front for which you and the station both are at the leading edge, I suspect that might be your best hope of good reception, because there's a thing called channeling or ducting, and radio waves tend to follow certain layers of air at certain temperatures and get trapped in ducts like, heat or light. And that might, but those things are not going to happen very often. I mean, those conditions are not going to prevail.
Well, how about the jet stream? Would this relate any
No.
Sometimes you'll see the jet stream up by the Canadian border, and other times they dip away down near Kansas or something.
Only insofar as it causes layers of air of various temperatures to coincide between the two locations, would I say that the jet stream would have any influence at all.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Right, thanks for the call. On to another caller here. Charleston, there next, line number four. Hello.
Good morning. I just had a follow-up on the remote speaker comments. I can say that many audio retail stores sell 900 megahertz remote speakers that are not restricted to the line of sight that infrared is. And in fact, newer televisions, you can even program the audio output and choose which speaker system to use. 900 megahertz might transmit a few hundred feet, allow it to be put in other rooms, etc. So I thought I'd add that to the comments. I'd also like to say that I recall in the early days of remote control, even before the Japanese were manufacturing these sets, I seem to recall the early remote controls were hardwired to the television sets.
Right.
Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
It might have been Zenith, but I'm not sure about
right.
that.
Yeah.
And that was pretty restrictive, actually, to have to run a cable along the wall.
Right.
So I just thought I'd add those comments.
Yeah. Thank you. Right. Yes.
Thanks very much.
There are many, in fact, remote speaker systems sold that you can add to your audio system or whatever. If you want to, say, have a speaker system upstairs and your main stereo is in the living room downstairs, and it will very easily penetrate walls and allow you to have these things at other places. So there are many ways. The reason I mentioned the infrared headphones is that for someone who does headphone listening, as many hearing impaired people probably would do, that's probably one of the more convenient systems. Mm-hmm. The 900 megahertz systems tend to be fixed, but they are good for remote locations, certainly.
All right. Thanks for the call. Next caller is in Champaign, line two. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you guys are going to make any comments about the digital radio that NPR ran a few days ago on way they want to sell the digital radio for a fee per month and start putting them in cars?
Oh, the digital satellite radio.
Right.
Well, I just circulated an article on that to the staff, and I think I titled the note on it, The Enemy is Here. Well, there's been a lot of fear in the terrestrial radio industry about digital satellite radio.
Yeah.
The terrestrial, let's put it this way, us terrestrial radio people have sort of dragged our heels on the subject of digital radio and converting to it. And I think that if we don't watch it, we're going to get bitten by our digital satellite fellows. The only advantage, we have over them is that we have localism. And as long as people still care to get local news and local, weather and things like that, they'll still want to listen to us.
Right. That was going to be one of my comments. Plus, I'm not too keen on paying $10 a month.
Not really.
I mean, I already have my internet connection that I'm getting tired of paying for.
Right.
and it's just one thing after another with the digital age.
Well, that's right. And certainly digital terrestrial radio, when it finally arrives, will be free like our present analog system is. You'll obviously have to buy another receiver to receive it, but...
Are they coming up? I mean, they were talking about. Will that be adaptable to like the radio I have in my car? Do I have to go get a new radio?
Well,
or you don't know that yet.
We're pretty much convinced that digital terrestrial radio is going to be something that will probably be in band on channel. In other words, WILL FM, when it gets its digital assignment, will be allowed to transmit both digital and analog on 90.9, which we presently use for analog. And then eventually, when interest in analog finally wanes, sufficiently, we'll shut off the analog and we'll just be digital. Because the government, as you probably know, that the satellite radio will be on a much higher frequency than current FM broadcast.
Right.
But FM terrestrial broadcast digital is going to be, as we, at least as it is now going, all the companies working on terrestrial digital FM are working on the on-channel system. In other words, how to combine digital with analog. So we'll, and actually back in 1992, we, WILL-FM, were some of the first people to take part in these tests when the original USA Digital Radio was testing with a firm in Urbana. We did some of the first in-band on-channel tests, and of course they were unsatisfactorily noisy, so we didn't pursue them, and they didn't pursue that particular model.
All right, well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. This is something that I know I can remember having talked about going back some ways. For people who are going to be listening to radio, the benefit is a much higher quality product coming out of the speaker. But at the same time, the immediate reaction to people is, "What you mean I'm going to have to get rid of all my radios?" And when you think about, I'm sure we have at least one radio in every room of our house. Some, in fact, might have more than one radio. So that's, I'm sure, the thing that people right away say, "Well, wait a minute, what does that mean? I have to get rid of all my radios?"
Well, actually, if the in-band on-channel compatible system that everyone seems hung up on prevails, and I feel, frankly, about it about the same way my good friend Rich Warren feels, that it is a cobbled-up, compromised system that in no way will ever really be compatible or comparable to a good CD, because we have had simply to make too many compromises in the technical design. For instance, you cannot, there is an almost immutable rule that you have a certain amount of time to send a certain amount of information. And no matter how you compress it, how you cram it, in order to get more in, you're going to have to compromise something. The systems that they are using for terrestrial FM are highly compressed, and of course the CDs are not compressed. They are digitized, but they don't use any compression algorithms or psychoacoustic compression algorithms. Any terrestrial broadcast FM digital system does. So by its very nature, it can only approximate compact discs. Now we have Super Audio CDs coming out, which have tremendously large sampling rates, frequency responses out to 100 kilohertz. And how are we going to compare to that when we essentially are limited to, say, 20 kilohertz with a low sampling rate with a tremendous amount of compression? So I'm afraid FM broadcast is always, as long as it's limited by the terrestrial schemes they're using now, is always going to be taking a back seat, and it's not going to meet the needs of the audiophile.
Mm. So will it be noticeably better?
It will be noticeably better in some situations than is analog FM now. But a well-maintained analog FM station, and I am not an anti-digital troglodyte. I think I look forward to a lot of digital changes here at the station. But the point of it is, if we make a change, it should definitely be for the better. It should not be a cobbled-up compromise. We've done that in this industry in AM stereo. It was a fiasco of the, frankly, great technical embarrassment. And I don't think we in this industry can afford another fiasco of that nature.
We have time for, I think, one more caller Here's one in Urbana on our line number one. Hello.
Good morning. Yes. I have a couple of questions relating to the future, and that is from here in Champaign, Urbana. Should we wait to buy new television sets until digital service is available, or is that so far off that we should just go ahead and buy a set and wait for the other to come? And are there companies that will be foremost in providing certain sets, or do you think that there will be new companies formed that will come in and make the equipment for those of us who need to buy new sets?
Well, I'm tempted to say all of the above.
Okay.
But certainly there will be new companies.
Mm-hmm.
But the point of it is, I myself just had a need for a new television receiver.
Okay, now what are you going to do?
Well, I went ahead and bought one, but I bought a high-end, analog that has all kinds of connections for audio and for connecting additional signals to the set so that when we go digital here at the station,
yes,
which is inevitable,
right,
according to the present FCC schedule, for instance, we at WILL must be on the air with a digital signal by May of 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the now that is presuming that the timetable they have set, which they and they claim that this timetable is being realized. And certainly in the large cities and with the network affiliates that they have put first in their timetable, most of the aims they have, they say, are being realized, so that they say they have no reason at this time to expect that the analog service will not end in 2006.
Oh, I see. So it'll be a parallel then. They'll
yes.
Be different.
Mm-hmm. Well, for instance, we have to be on the air with a digital signal in May of 2003 if the timetable stays as it is.
Right.
But we expect to also have our Channel 12 analog signal running along with that.
I see.
And we have gotten a recently gotten a reassignment to Channel 9 for digital, which will mean we'll be able to operate a much more economical station than if we had to operate on our original assignment of Channel 33.
Uh-huh.
This will be a little bit better because, for instance, our present Channel 3 analog WCIA will be operating on Channel 5 digital. That's the assignment they've asked for and received. So
now, I don't know enough to know when you say you're going to have a different channel. Will that be both analog and digital, or will there be a different? It's probably a foolish question, but will there be a different channel for those two types?
Yes, there will. Each station that does this is and wishes to stay have its analog signal stay on until 2006.
Yes.
We'll have to operate two stations at the same time.
Well,
and
isn't that going to be horrendous if every station needs to have...
A very expensive, yes, and the
yes.
digital equipment is extremely expensive,
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
So we feel that we've kind of, well, let's say the government has given us a big bite to chew. Yeah.
I'm going to have to jump in here. My apologies to the caller, but we're at the time we're going to have to stop. I'm sure it's a continuing story. We'll talk more about it in the future, probably sometime soon. Rich
Fine.
Will be here, and he can weigh in on it, and Ed will be back on another day. And in the meantime, keep on, if you have questions, you can call us, send emails, send letters. We'll do our best to respond.
Right. I welcome that.
Very good. Ed West, our chief engineer.
Thank you for having me.